You know that specific kind of dread I'm talking about? It's 6:30 in the morning. Your alarm didn't go off, or if it did, it sounded like it was dying, this weak little beep.
Oh, yeah.
And you roll over, you fumble for your phone on the nightstand, and you're expecting to see that crisp green battery icon, the one that says you're ready for the world.
But it's not there.
It's not there, it's black. Or maybe it's hovering at 4%, just mocking you.
Yeah.
And why? Because when you set it down on that charging pad 7 hours ago, you were off center by what, 2 millimeters?
The morning panic. It is honestly the absolute worst way to start the day. You thought you were charging your phone, but really you were just heating up your nightstand.
And that is the exact problem we are solving today.
Oh.
We are doing a deep dive into a topic that effectively promises never again.
Yeah.
We're looking at the state of wireless charging right now, here in January 2026, and this massive shift called the Qi2 revolution.
It's technically pronounced Qi2, but yes, it is a revolution. And honestly, it's about time. For the last, what, decade, wireless charging was this nice-to-have feature.
A convenience.
Right, a convenience, but it was slow, it was inefficient, and frankly, it was unreliable. But if you look at the landscape now in 2026, the game has fundamentally changed. It's gone from a luxury gimmick to, well, the primary power standard.
So our mission for this deep dive is to figure out why magnets have suddenly taken over all our devices, how the industry apparently won something called a heat war, which sounds incredibly dramatic, and we're going to break down a specific guide. It's titled The Qi2 Revolution, a 2026 wireless charging guide.
A good one, too.
Yeah, we've got technical breakdowns in here, some serious analysis on thermal physics, and hardware rankings from our favorite analyst, Inspector Gemini.
Inspector Gemini usually doesn't miss. Their breakdown of the efficiency stats this year was eye-opening.
It really was. So let's start with the anatomy of this revolution. I mean, why are we treating this as such a big deal? What was actually broken about the old way? I'd put my phone down, it charged, mostly. Why fix what wasn't, fully broken?
Well, mostly is the key word there, isn't it? To really appreciate why Qi2 is so necessary, you have to understand the fatal flaw of the old standard. It all boils down to a concept called energy loss due to misalignment.
Which is, I guess, the fancy way of saying I just put my phone down crooked.
Right, but physically it's a bit more complex. Wireless charging works through induction, so you have a transmitter coil in the charger and a receiver coil in the phone. They need to talk to each other magnetically to induce a current. In the old days, if those two circles weren't perfectly lined up, if you were off by just a few millimeters, the magnetic fields just didn't couple correctly.
Okay, so the energy doesn't transfer. Does it just like
Well,
disappear?
no, and that's the really scary part. It can't just disappear. Physics dictates that energy has to be converted. So when that magnetic energy isn't turning into electricity for your battery, it converts into waste heat. It creates these things called eddy currents in the metal parts of the phone, or just resistive heat in the coils
And
themselves.
that explains why my phone used to feel like a hot potato in the morning.
Exactly. And that heat wasn't just, annoying to touch. It was actively cooking the chemicals inside your battery. Lithium-ion batteries absolutely hate heat. So every time you miss that sweet spot, you're essentially aging your phone faster. You are permanently degrading its capacity.
So the convenience of wireless charging was actually costing us the longevity of the device itself.
Precisely. It was inefficient and it was damaging. And that's why Qi2 is such a leap forward. It introduces something called the MPP, the magnetic power profile.
MPP. Okay, break that down for us.
Yeah.
Is this just a rebranding of Apple's MagSafe? Because it looks suspiciously similar.
It's built on the foundation of MagSafe, yes. But the context here is what matters. The Wireless Power Consortium effectively took Apple's proprietary tech, and with Apple's cooperation, they open-sourced it for the entire industry. It's the universal language of charging now.
So it's not an Apple thing anymore. It's an everyone thing.
Everyone, Android included. And the secret sauce isn't just that it holds the phone in place. The magnets physically force the phone into the perfect geometric sweet spot. It removes human error from the whole equation.
You can't mess it up.
You physically cannot misalign it. The magnets align the coils perfectly every single time.
So the charger basically grabs the phone and says, "Nope, you sit right here."
That's a great way to visualize it. And because of that mechanical precision, the efficiency numbers are just staggering. We went from about 60% efficiency with the old loose wireless charging, meaning 40% of the power was just wasted as heat, to over 85% with Qi2.
That's a massive jump. That's not an incremental update. That is a generational leap.
It is. But the magnets are only half the story. The guide really emphasizes something they call the data handshake.
A handshake.
Yeah.
Like a digital introduction.
Think of it more like a constant negotiation. In 2026, the charger and the phone are in constant high-speed communication. It's not just power flowing one way. The phone is telling the charger its exact battery percentage, its current temperature, its intake limit.
Why does the charger need to know the temperature?
For safety and for speed. If the phone starts to get even a tiny bit too warm, the charger receives that data and it throttles the power back in microseconds.
So it's smart power. It's not just a dumb fire hose of electricity anymore.
Correct. And that safety mechanism is exactly what allows Q2 to guarantee a consistent 15 watts of power delivery. In the past, you know, chargers would claim 15 watts on the box, but in reality, they'd hit that for maybe 2 minutes, get hot, and then drop to 5 watts to prevent a fire.
Right.
Now it's pure consistent delivery.
Okay, so we have magnets snapping things into place to stop the waste. We have computers talking to each other to keep things safe. But you mentioned earlier, and the source material highlights this heavily, a heat war. This sounds like an action movie title. The heat war of 2026. Who is fighting and how is it won?
Well, the enemy in 2026 technology is thermal limitations. We have these incredibly powerful processors in our phones. We're running AI models locally, and we're pumping power into them wirelessly. Heat is the arch enemy of all electronics.
It kills them.
It does. If you get them hot while charging, they die young. So the industry had to innovate to find ways to keep things cool while pushing all that power.
And I'm guessing this is where the material science comes in.
It is. The first weapon in the heat war is GaN gallium nitride.
I see GaN on every single box at the electronics store now. Is it just a buzzword? Yeah. I mean, what makes it so much better than the silicon we use for like 30 years?
It's definitely not a buzzword. Look, silicon is great. It got us to the smartphone era. But gallium nitride is what we call a wide bandgap semiconductor.
Okay, let's unpack wide bandgap before we lose everyone listening.
Think of it like a highway for electrons. Silicon is a narrow two-lane road. If you try to push too much traffic, that's electricity through it, you get friction, which creates heat.
A traffic jam.
A traffic jam. Gallium nitride is like a six-lane superhighway. It can conduct electricity at much higher voltages and speeds than silicon, and it does so with significantly less resistance.
And less resistance means less heat.
Exactly. And because it's so much more efficient, you can pack components tighter together without them melting. That's why a 60-watt charger today is the size of a cookie, whereas 5 years ago, it was the size of a brick.
So the actionable advice here is pretty clear. Mm-hmm. If I'm buying a charger and it doesn't say GaN on the box.
Put it back. In 2026, buying a non-GaN charger is like buying a car with a cassette player. It's obsolete tech that will run hotter and less efficiently.
Got it. GaN or bust. Now, the guide mentions a second weapon in this war, and this one sounds a bit more aggressive. Active cryocooling.
This is my favorite development because it feels like overkill, but it just works. Brands like Anker and Xiaomi, they realize that even with Gorin, fast wireless charging creates heat right at the surface of the phone.
Just from the process itself.
Just from the induction process. And passive cooling, just letting the air handle it, wasn't enough. So they started integrating active measures.
Active measures.
Fans. Miniature silent fans, often paired with these graphene cryo layers, directly inside the charging puck itself.
Wait, fans. Inside the charger. Doesn't that make it noisy? The last thing I want is a jet engine next to my bed.
You'd think so, but the tech has come a long way. They are whisper quiet. You essentially can't hear them unless you press your ear right up against the pad. But what they do is actively pull heat away from the back of the phone while it charges.
Uh-huh.
The guide mentions that this is the only way to ensure that 15-watt fast charge actually stays at 15 watts for an hour straight.
Just basically a localized air conditioner for your phone battery.
Oh, that's it. It's a whole system now. Magnets for alignment, GaN for efficient conversion, and cryocooling to manage the thermals. It's a complete ecosystem designed to fight heat.
Okay, I'm sold on the tech. It makes sense. But let's talk about adoption. It's great if the charger can do all this, but what about my phone? If I'm holding a phone in January 2026, do I have the magnets built in? Or am I still gluing a ring to my case?
It depends heavily on how old your device is, but the list is growing really fast. If we look at the landscape right now, Apple is obviously the pioneer. Native support, so magnets inside the chassis, is on everything from the iPhone 13 all the way up to the new iPhone 18.
Okay, so if you're holding on to, say, an iPhone 11 or 12...
You're in the glue era. You need a magnetic case to make this work. The phone supports the charging, but it doesn't have the grip.
And on the Android side, this is where the revolution part really comes from, right?
Yeah.
Because they were resistant for a while.
They were. But the convergence has finally happened. Samsung has native support on the Galaxy S25, the S26, and the Z Flip 7. If you have an S24 or older, you're back to needing a case.
And Google's Pixel.
The Pixel 9 and the Pixel 10 are natively supported. Pixel 8 and older need the case.
It's actually wild to think about. We finally have a world where I can walk into your house, you have an Android, I have an iPhone, and we can use the exact same charger, and it just snaps onto both of them perfectly.
It's the dream of a universal standard finally realized. No more asking, do you have a lightning cable or do you have a USB-C? You just look for the magnetic pad. It, you know, it democratizes power.
Speaking of pads, let's get to the fun part, the gear. Inspector Gemini has ranked the Hardware Hall of Fame for 2026. I want to know where I should be spending my money. Let's start with what the inspector calls the pocket kings, the portable power banks.
Right. These are the daily drivers. And rank number one, the gold standard, according to Inspector Gemini, is the Anker Mago power bank, specifically the Gen 3 10K model.
Anker's always reliable. But what makes this specific one the winner? There are 100 generic banks on Amazon.
It comes down to two things, information and grip. It's a 10,000 milliamp hour bank, sure. But the standout feature is the smart LCD screen on the side. It doesn't just show you a vague percentage. It calculates and shows exactly how many hours of charge you have left at the current output speed.
That is handy.
Mm-hmm.
I hate guessing if two dots means I have 30 minutes or, you know, 2 hours.
Exactly. And the magnets are rated at 15 newtons.
15 newtons. Translate that for us non-physicists.
That's basically industrial strength. I mean, you could theoretically dangle your phone from the power bank and shake it and it wouldn't let go.
Huh. I can just picture listeners trying that right now. Please don't drop your phone on the concrete to test that theory.
Please don't. But the point is, it's secure. It won't slide off in your bag, which was a huge problem with the Gen 1 magnetic banks.
All right, so who took second place?
The Samsung Wireless Battery Pack, the 2026 edition. The guide notes that Samsung kind of swallowed its pride here and released a fully magnetic bank that works with the universal Q2 standard. And it's a design marvel. It has a recycled titanium shell. It's designed to be incredibly slim, so it feels more like a wallet in your pocket, not a brick.
But I see a note here about the Galaxy ecosystem. Is there a catch?
Not a catch, but a bonus, really. If you own a Galaxy S26 or Z Flip 7, this bank uses a proprietary protocol for thermal syncing. It talks to Samsung phones better than any other bank can. So if you're team Samsung, this is definitely your pick.
And for the budget conscious, or maybe just people who hate bulky pockets.
That would be the Xiaomi Magnetic Ultra Slim, rank number three. It's only 5,000 millimeter, so half the capacity of the Anker, but it's only 8 millimeters thick.
8 millimeters? That's barely thicker than the phone itself.
It's essentially invisible. The idea is you snap it on for a quick top-up, and you genuinely forget it's even there. And because it's an aluminum unibody, it dissipates heat really well without needing fans.
Okay, so that's for when we're on the move. What about when I'm stationary? I'm at my desk. I want something that looks good, not a rat's nest of cables.
Yeah.
What does the inspector recommend for the minimalist setup?
The top choice here, hands down, is the Belkin Boost Charge Pro 3-in-1, the Q2 version.
Belkin has been doing these charging trees for a while now.
They have, but this one is really refined. It's a stainless steel tree. It looks like a piece of modern art, and it charges your phone, watch, and earbuds all at once. But the killer feature is the 360-degree rotation.
Meaning I can spin the phone around while it's stuck to the magnet.
Exactly. You can flip it horizontally to use the iPhone's standby mode, where it turns into a smart clock, or Android's desk mode. And it does this while still pumping the full 15 watts.
That's nice. It turns your phone into a little dashboard while you work.
Precisely. Now, if you want something a bit more executive, the luxury pick is the Sateki Aluminum Stand 2026.
I know Sateki. Very metallic. Matches the MacBook.
Very premium. This one folds flat, so it's travel friendly, which the Belkin tree is not. But what I really like is that it includes an extra USB-C port on the back. So you can plug in a wired device, maybe a tablet or a camera at the same time. It sort of acts as a hub.
Okay, so we've got the list. But let's be real. Not everyone is going to buy these specific models. People are going to walk into a store, scroll online, and see a million options. How do we arm them with a technical buying guide? How do they avoid buying a dud?
The guide lists 5 critical factors. If you ignore these, you're likely getting ripped off or at least getting substandard performance.
Okay, hit me. Number one,
WPC official certification. This is the most important one. The market is just flooded with knockoffs that say MagSafe style or magnetic ready. If it doesn't have the official Q2 logo on the box, walk away.
Because those fakes cap the speed, right?
They cap it at 7.5 watts, usually. And they don't have that secure data handshake we talked about earlier. You want the full 15 watts and you want the safety protocols. Look for the logo.
Okay. Logo check number two.
Pass-through charging. This is vital for power banks.
Explain that for us.
It basically answers the question, can the power bank charge your phone while the bank itself is plugged into the wall? This is crucial for travel. You get to a hotel, there's only one outlet near the bed, you want to daisy chain them, WAP to bank to phone, you wake up and both are at 100%.
Oh, I've been burned by that before.
Yeah.
You wake up and only the bank is charged, or only the phone, because the bank refused to multitask.
Exactly. Cheap banks can't handle that two-way traffic. Make sure the box says pass through.
Okay, factor number three. Real versus rated capacity. This sounds like math.
It is, and it's probably the biggest lie, or at least the biggest confusion in the battery industry.
Look it up.
A 10,000 milliamp battery bank does not give you 10,000 milliamp of charge to your phone.
It doesn't. Where does the rest of it go?
Well, wireless energy conversion has a tax. There's loss during the boost from the battery voltage to the charging voltage, and the more loss in the wireless transfer itself. Overall efficiency is usually around 65 to 70% for the whole system. So a 10K bank actually gives you roughly 6,500 milliamp of usable juice.
So if my phone has a 4,000 milliamp battery, a 10K bank isn't giving me 2.5 charges.
No, it's giving you maybe 1.5 full charges if you're lucky.
That is incredibly good to know. I think most people just assume 10,000 means 10,000.
I have to manage your expectations. It's wireless math. Factor number four, input-output ports. You absolutely need two-way USB-C PD or power delivery.
And the catchphrase here is, if you see micro USB in 2026,
you run away fast. It's ancient technology. It charges slowly and it breaks easily. If a manufacturer is still using micro USB, it means they're cutting corners everywhere else too.
Good to know. And finally, number five.
Ergonomics.
Right. If the mini model blocks your camera lens, it's just annoying.
Or if it hangs off the bottom of the phone, you want something that fits the footprint of your specific device.
So try it on if you can.
Or at least check the dimensions carefully against your phone model online.
Okay, we've covered the tech, the physics, the products, and the buying strategy. So here's the big question, the verdict. Is it finally time to cut the cord? Can I throw away all my cables?
The short answer is yes, for about 90% of your daily life.
90%. What's the other 10%?
Speed. Pure speed. If you are at the office, a cafe, or at your bedside, Q2 is mature enough. The 15-watt speed is sufficient. The snap-and-forget convenience is real. Once you get used to just magnetically snapping your phone onto a stand, looking for a cable, and fumbling with a port, feels archaic.
Feels like dial-up internet.
It really does. However, if you have an emergency, like you have 5% battery and 10 minutes before your Uber arrives, a wired connection is still technically faster for pure raw throughput on some devices.
Mm-hmm.
You can push 45 or even 100 watts over a wire on some Androids. Wireless is still capped at 15.
So keep a cable in the drawer for emergencies, but live on the magnets.
Exactly. It's a lifestyle shift. You're moving from charging events where you consciously plug in and wait to just constant power availability. You just exist near magnets and your phone stays full.
That's a great way to frame it. So final recommendations. You want that modern tech feel on the go.
Anker Mago. It's the inspector's top pick for a reason.
And for the desk.
The Belkin. It's functional art.
All right. Before we wrap up, I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier. The data handshake.
Hmm.
The phone and the charger talking about thermals, battery health, throttling speeds.
Yes.
So here's a provocative thought for you. With data handshakes and thermal syncing now becoming standard, are we moving toward a future where the charger knows more about your phone's health than you do?
That is a fascinating implication.
Right. I mean, could a public charger at a coffee shop technically refuse to charge your phone because it detects your battery is too degraded? Or could it harvest data on how hot your device runs?
We're looking at a world where power isn't just electricity anymore, it's information. The charger itself is becoming a diagnostic tool. That's a deep rabbit hole for another time, but you're right to bring it up. We are handing over data just to get electrons.
Just something to think about next time you snap onto a strange magnet.
Indeed.
That's all for today's deep dive. We hope you feel ready to navigate the Q2 landscape. Stop looking for the charging hole, everyone. Just find the magnet.
And stay charged.
See you next time.